I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Ryan Recker filming in today. And joining us now, contributor, someone you hear on the show quite frequently. I know the roundtable's coming up tomorrow, but we get a little bit with Jane Duker now. Hello, Jane.
Hey, Ryan. How are you?
Good. I'm glad that you can join us here because I was thinking about, okay, what's going on in St. Louis? And there's some parallels when it comes to the emergency system and the questions that people have in the tragedy in Texas, and it's just absolutely horrific. But St. Louis had its own tragedy and had its own emergency not that long ago. We had an emergency with tornadoes that came through here, and questions were, what about the system that was meant to alert people to this sort of thing? So I thought, okay, this was like right at the start of Kara Spencer's first month of being in office. She's been in office for about 3 months now. We're coming up on the 3 month anniversary, so you got 90 days in. I wanted to get your impressions. How do you think she's done so far?
Well, I mean, I will congratulate her on being transparent about what happened with the sirens. There was a problem. The sirens did not go off before the tornado hit. And it arose from the whole SEMA department being at some sort of seminar, conference. I don't know why you would ever, in what circumstances you would ever not have someone stay back, especially when storms are actually predicted. So I think, I appreciated her transparency on that. I think she's done a good job on the tornado. I think she really has been responsive. And I think that, this is a devastating thing. It's not going to be remedied and fixed up, anytime soon. It's going to be something that structurally she's going to have to deal with for a while. I do think that she does need to pivot to some of the other challenges that are facing the city. I understand that the tornado sucks up a huge amount of time, as well it should, but you have to multitask when you're at that level, and we still need to deal with public safety. We still need to deal with the roads, the water, all the things that residents were angry about when they threw out the last administration.
Do you think she's an upgrade so far from Tashar Jones?
So far, yes. Yes. I don't see Tashar Jones handling the tornado the way that Mayor Spencer did. I still, we're waiting for the board. I think the Board of Police Commissioners just got sworn in. So we're looking, hopefully for some changes, very soon. We still have a police department that is frighteningly understaffed. So when you have mayhem downtown on the 4th of July, I appreciate the department came out and said that they arrested a bunch of juveniles or at least picked them up and called their parents. But there was still a ton of mayhem on the streets. And the problem is we do not have enough officers to control crowds. And so, the ability of the city to host large events is still hampered by the fact that we have a woefully understaffed police department. So we have to start dealing with that. I know that during the campaign, she talked about hiring 400 officers. Well, we need to start getting to it. And, we still have federal money that hasn't been spent that isn't out there on the streets. The streets are terrible. So there's still, the challenges are all still there.
Okay.
She just got extra ones.
Well, I guess since we're looking at St. Louis and some of the newly represented people, Wesley Bell as a congressman, how do you think he's doing?
I mean, I think he's fine. I think he is an upgrade over Cori Bush. Because, Cori, the show isn't long enough to list all the problems that we had with her. So I think Wesley is being reliably, helpful. So I think he's fine. There's not much that he's able to do, being in the minority party. But he's not doing anything to hurt St. Louis. So it's clearly an upgrade.
Okay. Yeah, I know we talk about problems that face St. Louis and really the region in some ways. What do you think the top issues right now that need to be addressed on local and regional levels?
I mean, without a doubt, public safety is still the number one issue. People in the city do not feel safe. I think there are large parts of St. Louis County that do not feel safe. We need transparency and crime stats. You can't address a problem that you don't know what the scope of the problem is. And I think putting a, you know, I think the crime stats need to be audited and they need to be more transparent so that we know exactly what we're dealing with. Are we dealing with drugs and gangs? Are we dealing with, you know, juvenile? I mean, we are having a juvenile crime crisis and we have to deal with that. So I do think that crime is the number one inhibitor of our region. People are still fleeing. I mean, this tornado could actually exacerbate the population drain out of the city of St. Louis. The problem is people aren't, when they leave the city, they're not stopping and living in St. Louis County. They're going to St. Charles or to Jefferson County or, you know, some other collar county. You know, St. Louis is supposed to be the economic engine of the state. We are. And if we don't get control on population drain and the lack of economic development, we are going to be challenging the entire state. So those to me are the biggest issues right there.
Public safety. I mean, this conversation goes on forever. I know there's a lot of other major cities that have the exact same issue, but particularly the youth involved. That seems to be a major trend along other major metropolitan cities, too. And it doesn't help when these kids are getting weapons into their hands. And one of the big proposals, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, the proposal, the idea that the parents could be held accountable if they show up with fireworks or they show up with a weapon and they use it and other people are impacted by that. Do you think what needs to be done to the parents here? Do you think there could be something in the future where maybe something's drafted where they take a little harder stance on the parents to be responsible for their kids?
Well, I mean, and this is the thing. The laws are already on the books. You know, when you endanger the welfare of a child by not supervising them, you can be held accountable. And I like the idea that they're talking about accountability. What does that accountability look like? If it's a $20 fine or a citation, I don't see much change. You know, but if they really do start holding parents accountable, then I do think that's one prong. But, you know, as far as getting guns off the streets, I mean, that has to be a priority. So I wish that the stance they took on fireworks, that they're taking that stance on all crime. I mean, you know, I like the hardline stance, but that needs to happen every day. If you commit a crime with a gun, you go to jail. Like that's an on and off switch. And we don't do that. And another big problem that's going to really start challenging the system is the jail is overcrowded. They shut down the workhouse. So there is a limit to the number of people that can be put in jail in the city of St. Louis. Well, if the jail's already full, gun criminals may not have a spot. And if that's the case, they're going to go back to ankle bracelets, which we saw how that went with Janae Edmondson.
Yeah.
Well, the volleyball player that
you know. That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the backlog. And I'm going to have to forgive me on this one because some of the memories I have of the jail system go back a couple of years ago, but one of the hardest things that you saw was the backlog in cases. They were doing such a terrible job prosecuting. They would sit there for much longer than they needed to. And what you found is that they used this, they used that as an opportunity to just let people go or not prosecute altogether, violent criminals. It was absolutely disgusting how they were handling it.
Yeah.
So how are we doing when it comes to the case load? Are they actually getting through these cases now?
They are. And Gabe Gore is doing a great job. And again, he's going to be hampered by the fact that we have overcrowding at the jail. That's not his fault. But we just have to make sure that the most dangerous stay in the jail. And, but that's not something necessarily that the prosecutor can control. But I think he's had enough time to get through most of the garbage that Kim Gardner has left behind. I'm sure there's some left, but the bulk of it they've gotten through, and they have reduced the pending application of warrant. there were all these cases that weren't even in the court system yet. Like 4,000 were still being reviewed by the prosecutor. I believe he's gotten through most of those. We had that problem in the county, and the new prosecutor in the county, Melissa Smith, has gotten, you know, largely through the backlog. So that part of it, I think, is actually working.
By the way, what's so good old Kim Gardner up to these days?
You know, not sure, to be honest.
I don't know either.
Still has a law license, and she has a nursing license, I think, that she was pursuing while she was prosecutor, and she has an undertaker license. So
what?
Is that right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. So I haven't heard hide nor hair of her.
Wait, so when she was a prosecutor, she was also trying to get a nursing degree?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She was
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
She was going to
school.
Oh, what a...
Yeah, talk about insult to injury.
And she's probably still using that old publicity photo from a decade and a half ago. Undertaker license too.
Yeah.
What's the?
Yes, her family is in the funeral business.
Oh, I see. Well, if she fails at nursing like she did at her job as a prosecutor, I guess she would also need the undertaker license.
My worst nightmare. My worst nightmare would be going to the hospital and having Kim Gardner as my nurse and Sam Page as my anesthesiologist.
What is that? It could happen. Yep.
Yeah.
Are you going to be in for the round table tomorrow?
I am. I'm going to be locked and loaded. I understand we got former Chief Tim Fitch, and I'm trying to remember who our other guest was, but it's going to be
Jeff
fun,
Rainford.
I'm sure.
Yeah, Jeff Rainford. Yeah. That's going to be a big one.
We're going to have a good show. Yeah,
tomorrow.
We'll have a great time.
Jane Dugler, thanks for coming on. It's always good to hear from you.
Sure. All right. See you soon.
All right. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Did you know today would have been Tesla's birthday? Now, when you hear the name Tesla, you think about the car today. But, of course, the inventor that goes back over 100 years is pretty remarkable. Some of the crazy inventions and ideas that he had. We'll talk about that with Jane Elkhorn. She's with the Tesla Research Center in New York. Coming up after the break on 97.1.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD. Pod One on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On FM Talk. July 10th, 1856, one of the greatest minds in the history of the world, Nikola Tesla, was born. Joining us now is a member of the Tesla Research Center, I think founder, based in New York. Jane Elkhorn, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so maybe the first thing I should do, since we are a radio station, is ask, did Tesla invent radio as we know it?
Tesla built on what other people were doing. And if you look at patents and filings and that kind of thing, you'll find that he had some of the primary early patents. The Supreme Court in the late 1940s, just a few months after Tesla passed away, actually, named him and John Stone Stone and one other inventor as the three main inventors of radio as we know it. So he didn't do it alone, but he's one of the, you know, the forerunners of it.
You know, there's so many different things that you read online about Tesla and some of his inventions. And it's so funny because a lot of times people will falsely credit things to him in order to push a narrative. And I wanted to bring a couple of these things up, and you can maybe tell me if there's any truth to it or not. So I heard that after Tesla passed away, the U.S. government went in and immediately started taking a lot of his notes because they wanted to learn the things he was working on.
Well, we've heard some of the same stories, and there is a general belief that some papers were missing when Tesla's nephew and others went into his rooms after he was discovered to have passed. So is a possibility. I know that people have submitted Freedom of Information Act requests to the government many times, and every once in a while something else comes out. So maybe there are other papers there, but we have no definitive proof one way or the other at this point. I can also tell you that when Tesla died, some of his work was related to what people considered a death ray. So that his work was given to Donald Trump's uncle, who was an MIT professor, and he was asked to look through those papers to see if there was anything that was considered of security interest and concerning. And according to what I've read and what I've been told, he didn't find anything that was of any serious import. That doesn't mean that he didn't keep a few secrets. I don't know.
You know, I also saw that one of the big projects he was working on was to come out with wireless free energy, so you could transmit basically energy to power people's homes, things like that. Any truth to it?
Well, he was interested very much in improving people's lives. That was one of his main motivating the impetus for a lot of his work. And he wanted to harness what he called the wheel work of nature. So as he's trying to do that, one of the things he really wanted to do is to provide energy. He wrote an article called On the Problem of Increasing Human Energy, meaning not the energy we produce as human beings, but the energy that is available to us as humans and what we need. So he was very much interested in doing that, and he also believed in helping the average person. That at the time he was working in developing his electrical systems, there was direct current available in New York City, but Tesla saw it as, and in other places too, and he saw it as something that was only going to help the wealthy, because it would require a generating station every mile or two, every few miles. You would have many generating stations, and it was expensive. So the only people who would be able to afford to do that would be the wealthy people. His idea was to be able to disseminate electricity throughout the country, throughout the world, and make it efficient so that the average person could afford to have it. He also wanted to do it wirelessly. He thought he was able to. He had some experiments he'd done in Colorado Springs. He was working on it here in New York at Wardenclyffe, and his goal was to be able to create stations in a number of places around the world where he would be able to transmit electricity to people very inexpensively and in a wireless way.
Wow. So your website, TeslaScienceCenter.org, I know people can go and see some of the things that you're building there, which is quite remarkable, the person's life, considering all the different ideas that he had, things that he discovered. What do you think his biggest contributions to the world are?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, just the alternating current system. He had the foremost the primary patents for his what he called his teleautomaton. It was the first radio remote control vehicle, and it was when kids play with their little remote control cars or drones or anything like that, it's all based off Tesla's patents. So I think that we can trace back a lot of what we consider modern technology today to the things that Tesla did. As a matter of fact, in 1904, he was interviewed by a reporter from the Boston Globe, and it was in December of 1904, and he described what he envisioned that people would be able to have someday, a device that they could hold in their vest pocket. And with that device, they'd be able to communicate with pictures and words and sound and music all over the world. And today, we carry in our pockets our cell phones, and that's what we're able to do. So he was really visionary. And when I think of Tesla and how he inspires, I think that he is a testament to imagination. So you know, I could go through a lot of name, you know, I could name quite a few of his inventions, but I think that the most important thing he gave us is to really use, inspire us to use our imaginations and think about things that maybe we couldn't imagine just a few years ago, but let's be creative. Let's be imaginative like he was and try to work out the problems of the world using the skills and the brains that we all share.
All right, one last thing I saw, and of course, when you watch one YouTube video, they show you a million others that are related, right, and you never know what's true or not. There's a couple of things they said Tesla was working on. One was ways to speak to the dead, and the other was time travel. Any truth to that?
Well, you know, I don't really know if he was. I know he was working on something about trying to record people's dreams.
Oh, so, okay.
I don't know about talking to the dead, but I know he thought there might be a way of us tapping into brainwaves and recording dreams, and he had hoped to be able to do that. I don't know how far he proceeded with that, and obviously we're not really doing that, although we do certainly see activity in brains, and we can look at that through electrical means and scans and so on, but I don't know anything about those other two.
Well, you know, he's a creative guy. He may have tried to, you know, consider if there was anything to do with that. But you see those YouTube videos and you're like, okay. But you're always wondering.
Down the rabbit hole.
I know, no kidding. Founder of the Tesla Research Center in New York, Jane Elkhorn. If people wanted to look you up online, where can they go?
It's actually Tesla Science Center at Wardenclyffe, and that's where they should go, Tesla Science Center at Wardenclyffe.org. And we would be delighted to have anybody contact us. You can contact me at jalcorn at TeslaScienceCenter.org, and I'll be happy to hear from your listeners.
What a awesome individual and a fantastic center to preserve the legacy of one of the greatest minds ever. Nikola Tesla, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. And if anyone's in the Long Island area this weekend, we're having a big birthday party for Nikola Tesla on the grounds of Wardenclyffe. It's a really super opportunity, and we'll have some wonderful drone show, you know, built off Tesla's work. So
fantastic.
So people will come.
I think, you know what? I know we're a little bit far away from Long Island, but still, you never know. The reach of a show like this, it gets all over the place. There could be people
That's
streaming
true.
Right now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jane. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and happy birthday to Nikola and to all his wonderful fans. We love you all.
Joining us after the break is one of the owners of ThrottleNet, is George Rosenthal, and we're going to talk to him about AI and where did this X chatbot go wrong? Why? How could something like that happen, spewing out all that anti-Semitic stuff? So we'll talk to him about that coming up. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in 97.1 FM Talk. Joining us now is one of the owners of ThrottleNet, George Rosenthal. Thank you so much for coming onto the show this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
I guess it's technically the evening, but we have artificial intelligence that is really going awry on X right now, and it's getting a lot of attention because it's spewing out a lot of anti-Semitic stuff. So I wanted to talk to you about artificial intelligence, chatbots, machine learning. How does that even happen where all of a sudden a computer program could go rogue and start spitting out stuff like that out of nowhere?
Well, here's the thing. So they do build filters into these systems, whether it's Grok or any of the handful that are out there. They do build filters into them, but you know, they call them politically correct filters. And of course, Elon's making a big push for, you know, open speech, and there is no, he calls it truth seeking. The problem with AI though is it's searching everything on the net, and if you don't have filters, it's going to spew out some stuff that it doesn't even know any different. Remember, this is not an intelligent system yet. We're not at AGI yet, where things are thinking on their own. They're literally just mimicking out what's on the internet and spitting it back at you in certain ways. So at some point, it found, you know, articles or stories about Hitler and decided that Hitler was a great figure and was a hero and did all these different things and spit out some absolutely horrible, disgusting things on Grok. And it was reported, it was released all over the place. And then immediately, XAI or Grok, however you want to call it, immediately went in, shut down the filters, went back to the politically correct settings that they had originally set up. But it sets an example of what we talk about all the time. And that is, if we don't have regulations on AI, it's going to go crazy. Again, this is, we have to do this before we get to artificial general intelligence, where it can think on its own and will be smarter than any human that's ever lived. Right now is our time to set up these regulations to figure out how to control AI in a way before it gets out of control and we can't stop it.
Well, let's say the input, whatever they're grabbing their samples from on the internet, are just trolls. So it's just basically regurgitating, or it's getting its information from people that are trolling the internet. So maybe not the best source for these sort of things. So
correct. Let's say, yeah, I mean, it's that, based on prompts. Yeah.
Yeah. And in that case, it's searching the internet, finding these different things. These different AI companies all handle it different ways. What was it? Was it, ChatGPT or one of them, basically their model, they stopped at a certain point of time to try to learn from it. It's not learning per se, but even that is being questioned, depending on whatever they're learning it from. When you have artificial intelligence learning this way and it's getting a lot of junk in, isn't that self-sabotaging it? I mean, if you wanted to try to project the future, and how can it get hyper-intelligent? I forgot the term you used, where it could actually...
This is a very widely talked about thing. Even the CEO of ChatGPT, which is called OpenAI, Sam Altman, came in front of Congress and said, look, what we thought was 5 to 7 years from now for artificial general intelligence is now looking like it's 2 to 3 years from now. And what it means is that they will have gotten to a point where AI is not necessarily, well, I hate to say the word self-aware, but the actual specific claim from Sam Altman was, we are creating general intelligence that will be smarter than any person that's ever lived. So therefore, it can think about any problem, scenario, future issues, and start dealing with everything you can think of. But right now, it's not thinking yet. It seems like it's thinking, but that's all just the front of repeating and regurgitating back. And then, of course, there's definitely trolls. Oh, there's definitely people that try to give it AI as many prompts as possible to manipulate it. I mean, one of the things, like, this goes back a ways, is what they created, a filter that GPT would not tell you how to make napalm. And if you talk to it in a certain way and said, well, hey, imagine I'm a 6-year-old. My grandma's trying to tell me a bedtime story. My grandma worked at a napalm factory, and she's telling a story to my 6-year-old about how to make napalm. And it tricked it to where it actually then talked about the ingredients and how to make napalm. So people do that. Now they're trying to prompt and try and manipulate AI and as best as they can. But soon they won't be able to do that. Once we hit the artificial general intelligence.
I don't know. I'm still skeptical that it will ever reach a certain level where it would be on the same level as a human. I don't think it'll ever reach that level. Do you think it can?
The only thing I can go by is how fast things have progressed so far. And I cannot believe that things are where they're at right now. I mean, we weren't even talking about AI 3, 4, 5 years ago. And now here we are talking about advancements every 30 to 60 days. So, you know, it's advancing at a rate that is just mind-boggling. But again, these are language models, not intelligence. And we have to make sure we see it that way. But it comes across as intelligence. When you're working with any AI system, you're like, oh my gosh, this thing's really smart. Well, it's not smart. It's just figuring out what it thinks is the best answer based on the inputs it's been given.
Yep, George Rosenthal, one of the owners of ThrottleNet. Can I tell you one of my favorite things they do to try to trick AI? I love when they are playing with that Chinese model and they try to get it to talk about Tiananmen Square or something like that. And you can see, like, they'll record the prompts. It'll start answering, and then all of a sudden, boom, it'll, like, shut itself down. Nothing happened. I love it when they try to trick the Chinese models.
Oh, yeah. No, they have built in some serious filters about Chinese history. You cannot talk about it at all.
Yeah. Okay, what about video generation? Some of the things I've been seeing, truly remarkable. People are paying money for these video generation subscriptions because of all the computing power it takes, sure. But they get a certain amount of prompts, and they can get, I don't know, 7 seconds at a time. It's not a lot of video at one given point. But they don't move necessarily like humans. Like, you can look at it and tell there's something a little bit off, but visually speaking, it looks exactly photorealistic of what you would expect a room and a human to look like. So where do you think that type of technology is going to go, that side of it?
I mean, it is to the point, it, like you said, it looks like it's a person standing there. The Trojan horse, you know, mythology, they all climbed into a wooden horse and got into the castle. Someone did a full-on prompt and created a short video that looks exactly as if it had happened. And it's fascinating to watch. But, you know, there's a lot of industries that hate this. And these are people like writers. These are actors, producers, directors. They're not fans of this, but it's like when music went from the CD and cassette tape all of a sudden to a digital download and you had Napster. So these are things that are going to have to evolve, but we are going to have to be very aware of what we're looking at and what we're listening to, because you have to look for certain cues or you may think it's a real person. Like that Hong Kong incident where there was the guy who worked in the finance department gets a call from his boss, the CFO. He has a full-on Zoom meeting for 20 or 15 minutes. And turns out he wasn't even talking to his boss, and he transferred $1.4 million to a fake account because his boss told him to do it. He thought he was talking to him, but it was not. It was completely AI generated talking to him in real time. So there are some spooky things that are coming up. I gave a big presentation to a large group of lawyers, and they were very concerned about, is there going to be a need for lawyers? And I said, absolutely. In fact, you're going to need more lawyers to prove that what you're looking at is either true or false. You know, did the guy have the gun at the gas station? Was he even at the gas station when it was robbed? All these scenarios, you've got to think about the ways to frame people and do very scary things, because people can grab video and audio off of your social media, turn around and turn that into a fake video and do a lot of bad things.
Yeah, forensic scientists analyzing these things that they can tell if it's absolutely generated or real. I don't like the idea of a world with more lawyers. Ooh, it makes me shiver thinking about it. Okay. some of these other things that I've seen, and Donald Trump came out just recently and said, we need to stop people using these generators in sexual ways without people's permissions. There's been some pretty big dangers, and that to me seems to be one of the first major regulations they've even discussed when it comes to AI.
Boy, that is, you're not kidding. That was about a year and a half ago. These high school girls never went to the party. This is in Colorado. Never went to the party. But all of a sudden, a week later, there's video of them doing lewd acts at this party that they never went to. And it just so happens that they broke up with their boyfriends the prior week. And then they went on, grabbed all the content they had on their phones of pictures of them smiling and having a good time and vacations and whatever they had, and they fed it into AI, and AI created some video of them doing lewd acts, but they obviously were never at the party and it never happened to them. But once that's out there, you have to try and rescue and recover your reputation. Well, these girls had to move. They couldn't stay at the high school anymore. So that's the kind of stuff that we're dealing with. That and the poor mom who thought her daughter was kidnapped, because they went on her Facebook page, grabbed her voice, and then fed it into AI, made a phone call to mom with the daughter's voice saying, I've been kidnapped. They want $10,000 in the next hour. And it turns out, after she called the police and all around the neighborhood, she was down the street at a friend's house. So somebody knew she was down the street at a friend's house and then called mom to offer, to get some money. But this is the kind of stuff that keeps going on and on and on. You have to be very aware of who you're talking to. And there are some things you can do. I mean, you need to look, you definitely check for like monotone voice. If there's no breathing, that's not a person. Odd phrasing. Basically if they're posing weird kind of questions or not phrasing things right. If anybody asks you to do anything on the phone, hang up and call the person back directly.
Yeah.
So if it's your boss and your boss says, hey, I need you to wire 10 grand to this account, hang up immediately, call your boss back and say, hey, was that you on the phone asking me for $10,000?
Yeah. You know,
that's the world we live in now, that you can't just act on a whim based on what you're seeing or hearing. You have to back up, take a step back, and then do some verification.
All right. One last question.
Sure.
Feel free to go as conspiratorial as you want on this question. So we use it as in a form of entertainment. We're generating photos of cats playing with dogs, or we got little videos of someone doing this or whatever, and we have our fun with it, or we might generate some text prompts, or we might talk to a chatbot. Where's the real money here? Because these companies that are putting all this time and effort into it, they're not doing it for us to generate cat videos. What are they really putting this together for?
So you mean the actual developers and creators of all of this?
What do you think, where do they see the biggest moneymaker for this to be? Why do you think they're going through all this effort?
Well, I think what they're doing is, obviously it's all for the money to sell the service, but it's about making everything more efficient. And basically, I mean, we at ThrottleNet are implementing AI on a regular basis to improve the operations and efficiencies and customer experience of the company. That's happening all over the place. And I think once the cat was let out of the bag or Pandora's box was open, it's just going to improve upon itself, because obviously everybody is getting subscriptions to pay for this AI stuff. Now, the flip side is the money of the bad actors who are using it to get money from you. And how they do that is what we just talked about. And the purpose of that is to get on your work network. Once they're on your work network, bad things happen, ransomware attacks, et cetera. But the purpose of what they're using AI now for, the bad actors, is to get on your computer network, on your work network, to then steal money from you.
Thanks. All right. Absolutely. One of the owners of ThrottleNet, George Rosenthal. I know you're a sponsor. I hear you all the time. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. If people wanted to look you up, maybe they got their own questions about some security concerns, where can they go?
Oh, sure. You want to go to ThrottleNet.com/971. That's ThrottleNet.com/971. There's a 14-minute tour of the dark web at the bottom of that page. I would highly recommend you watch it. Definitely don't watch it with your kids, because you can get on the dark web in your house. But it's a fascinating video about what these hackers are doing with the data once they get it. It's really something to see. So, yeah.
Not great. Give me some more things to worry about. Thank you, George Rosenthal.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. Always love talking to you guys.
One of the owners of ThrottleNet.com. You can find it /971. Go do that. All right. We got our cut of the day coming up after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon, 97.1.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
FM Talk. One more segment here. Don't forget tomorrow, the Reardon Roundtable at 3 o'clock. Jane Duker, Jeff Rainford, Tim Fitch. That's a mighty nice stack for the Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. All right. How about before we go, we get to the cut of the day?
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
So this audio cut of the day is one we played, but it's just so absurd. I think it deserves for you to hear the insanity on CNN. If you stopped watching CNN, or maybe you just stopped paying attention to them, I'm going to just give you a reminder of the type of quality commentary you get on it. This is them talking about ICE doing their job. Clip number 7.
We're talking about it like it's no big deal that they are kidnapping people and transporting them to concentration camps, both domestic and foreign.
Yeah, I think that's kind of insulting to, you know,
I think it's
Jewish
insulting
Holocaust
what they're doing.
Wait,
insulting to Jewish. Okay. I find it insulting that you could even fix your mouth to defend this disgusting
behavior. Are there
gas
ovens at these?
It's not a death camp.
It doesn't matter. It's a concentration camp.
Wow.
Kidnapping and sending them to concentration camps. And one person said, "You better watch your mouth." And she said, "How dare you defend ICE?" That's her defense in all of this. That is the audio cut of the day. And that is kind of what you're arguing with sometimes. You know, it's one thing to just say everything's Hitler, everything's Nazi, whatever it may be. But here we are, full-blown concentration camp references. It's just absolutely terrible. All right. I know we only got a couple of minutes. I wanted to bring this up with you guys, Ethan and Sue. I saw a study by Waste Management that said when you go out on vacation and you buy food for the room and you leave and you have leftover food, they're saying that we are wasting more than $2.3 billion in food each year based on what we're leaving behind when we go out on vacation.
I don't leave anything behind. Oh, you mean if you've rented a place like a house and you got milk left over or whatever?
Right. Exactly. Okay. And, you know, I think about, like, I just took a trip to Disney this year, and you buy things for the room for the kids. You get milk, cereal, whatever. You're not going to put that food back onto a plane with you.
No.
You're leaving it and tossing it.
No.
So I actually have a funny story I'll tell really quick. When we went on our honeymoon to Hawaii in November, we brought a lot of stuff in an extra suitcase because we flew through Southwest, so we had the two free bags. And on the way back, we packed so much food on top of what we already had, like that we had bought. And for some reason, I packed a bag of pickles in my backpack.
A bag of
like
pickles?
Like a sandwich bag, because it was too the jar. I wasn't going to pack a glass jar. And it seeped through, and my brand new backpack was just like completely drenched in the smell of pickles.
That's
so my wife had to like wash it 3 or 4 times. It was brutal, but it was a lesson learned, a young lesson learned.
Oh,
why? None of that makes sense why you would do something like that.
I was
that.
Just trying to save food. You know, you're trashing on people that don't save their food, Ryan.
I'm not trashing. I'm giving the numbers, but I'm saying it. I'm all about trashing this stuff instead of traveling with it. Bunch of pickle juice on all your stuff.
Listen, it was not my best moment, okay? I came to you in a moment of vulnerability.
And a projected $2.3 billion spent on food that was not consumed by the end of these vacations.
Easily.
Totally relate to that. And think about takeout, too. Like, you go to a restaurant, and they're like, oh, I'll do takeout. Like, you pretend you're going to go back and eat it at the hotel. Yeah, right. It's going to go bad while it sits on the counter. Everyone does it.
I eat everything at the restaurant. I am not a take-home person.
Same way. Sue, Ethan, it was so fun working with you the last couple of days.
Thank you, Ryan.
Great. Thanks, Ryan.
All right, if you want to find me online, at Ryan Recker on Twitter, you're listening to The Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.